The Brandon McMillan Podcast is brought to you by Lucy Pet Food. Why feed Lucy Pet Food? Because they specialize in gut health, which is vital to the overall health of your dog. I feed it to all my dogs because it works. Go check them out today at lucypetfood.com. Hey everyone, it's Brandon McMillan, and this is my podcast. Does your dog chew your favorite shoes? Do you like hearing current events with animals? Do you like listening to other people's incredible stories about how a dog saved their life? Then this is the podcast for you. I'll be giving training and behavior advice, talking with guests, discussing current events, and taking calls from you to answer questions about anything and everything animal or human related. I mean, come on, let's face it. We're all animals, right? Be sure to tune in and subscribe. And also be sure to tell your friends, your family, heck, even tell your dogs. See you soon. Here's an age-old question that we have for our dogs. Why do we give them dog food? Why not cook for our dogs? What about raw food? Is raw food safer than dog food? Is raw food safer than cooked food? Is cooked food better than raw food? Well, we're going to have all those questions answered today by one of the gurus in the dog food industry. And of course, I'm going to do a little Q&A with the listeners, all today on the Brandon McMillan Podcast. All right, Heidi from Las Vegas writes in. Heidi says, hello, Brandon. I just got a four-month-old King Charles Spaniel. She is the sweetest dog ever, but she is peeing and pooping all over the house. I take her out about five times a day. I let her walk around the grass and do her business, but then she comes back in, and a short time later, she still goes to the bathroom in the house. I don't know what to do. Please help. Heidi. Okay, Heidi. I'm going to break this down step by step, and your main tool is going to be the crate, okay? We're going to do what's called crate training. A lot of people think that if you just take your dog out a lot, that that's how you teach them not to use the bathroom in the house. That is a very long road, and I would never recommend it. The reason why is because you're going to have to be reprimanding that dog time and again. There's no way that dog is going to learn efficiently by you just taking it out constantly, because you're taking it outside to pee and do its business, but when it gets back in the house, it doesn't really know the rules in the house. So here's what we're going to do. We are going to get a crate. The size of the crate is very important. You have a King Charles Spaniel, so that's a small, medium-sized dog. So we're probably going to be like a medium-sized crate, okay? But here's how you know the adequate crate size. You don't want it to be too small. You don't want it to be too big. You can definitely tell when it's too small because the dog barely fits in there. If it's too big, that means the dog can literally walk to the other end, and it's almost like a one-bedroom apartment, okay? I need the crate to be about, when the dog stands up, it has to be on each side about 20% bigger than the dog. In other words, the dog has to be able to fit comfortably in there. The dog can stand up, turn around in a circle, and lie back down comfortably without bumping the walls. All right. So this is up to you to figure out the adequate size. But the main point here is you can't have the crate too big. Okay, and I'll explain why in a little bit. Okay, so here's the process. This is called the house training triangle. The house training triangle is a triangle that we're going to complete throughout the day, over and over. We're going to start by the dog sleeps in the crate at night, okay? No exceptions. There's no way a four-month-old puppy, especially if she's still going in the house, you can't trust her, okay? She's not to be trusted at this point. First thing in the morning, I want you to let her out of that crate and you make a beeline for the outside. I do not want you to just let her out of the crate and let her wander the house for even 10 seconds. She's going to have to go right away. You let her outside, and the second she does her business, and trust me, she will right away, I want you to reward her with a treat. Heavy praise, let her know that outside's where you want her to go. From there, she gets free time in the house, okay? Now here's how we're gonna do this timing. When you let her out of the crate, she goes outside. That's one part of the triangle. It's from the crate to the outside, okay? Then she goes from outside to free time in the house. That's another part of the triangle. The free time in the house, you're only gonna let her have free time for about an hour, okay? Your hour free time in the house is observed, and I want you to have gates blocking off all doorways to other rooms in the house. She needs to learn this room for room, one room at a time. Okay, from there, after her 1 hour of free time, you're gonna put her back in the crate, effectively completing the triangle. This is why it's called the house training triangle. It goes from the crate to outside to free time in the house. Put her in the crate. You're going to put her in there for about 2.5 to 3 hours. Okay? After the 2.5 to 3 hour period, you want to let her right back outside. Again, this is where the triangle goes into effect. Let her outside. She's going to do her business. Most likely, she'll go within the first 30 seconds. When she goes, heavy praise, give her a reward, and then you let her back in the house. She gets 1 hour of free time. Now, your goal, as you continue this triangle through the week, every day you are going to take away time in the crate, and you're going to add free time in the house. So every day, let's just say you're going to take away about 15, 20 minutes of free time in the crate. That's 15, 20 minutes of free time you are going to add in the house. So effectively, what you're doing throughout the week, if you're good, you can do this in a week. Okay, typically they take about maybe 10 days, 2 weeks, especially when they're young like this. What you're going to do is every day you're chipping away time in that crate and adding time in the house. Effectively, what's happening is eventually there's almost no crate time and there's hours and hours of free time in the house until eventually you just retire the crate altogether, completing the house training triangle. This is why it's called the house training triangle. You are doing this triangle all day long, but you are taking away crate time and adding free time in the house every day, okay? Now, a couple of footnotes here. Number one, especially with a puppy, when you feed her, you're going to feed her in the crate, but you are going to let her outside right after, okay? Because puppies, I mean, all dogs in general, but especially puppies, their systems get moving after you feed them, okay? So the second you feed her, I want you to take her outside and stand there for a good, 5-10 minutes. And again, the process is you reward heavily whenever she goes outside. Once she does go outside, especially if she does both of her businesses, now you can let her back in the house for the free time. Okay, so also, if she does go to the bathroom in the house, and there's a good chance she will throughout the couple weeks you're doing this, I want you to get a cinder block, something heavy. I like cinder blocks because they pretty much are anchors for any dog. I want you to tie a leash around the cinder block, and I want you to connect her to it and put it right near which she made the mess, okay? Don't put it right on top of it. Put it just a few feet away. She's going to get the point, trust me. No dog likes to hang around their pee or poop. So once you do this, I want you to leave her there for pretty short time, 10, 15 minutes tops, all right? From there, I want you, after the 15 minutes, take her off the cinder block and repeat the process, go right back in the crate and begin the house training triangle once again, okay? She's going to make a mess here and there throughout this process. I don't want your reprimands to be too heavy. This is why I like to just do the cinder block. There's no yelling involved. There's no abuse. All you're doing is literally just put her right next to it. You don't even have to say anything. She knows. Okay, you can give her like a bad girl, no, knock it off, all the stuff that we do, but just don't make it too heavy. From there, take her off the cinder block, go right back into the crate, and continue the triangle. Start it over again, okay? Most likely, she's going to go much less in the house when you're doing this because you're not giving her an opportunity to go in the house because she's in the crate. Most dogs, and I mean overwhelmingly most, unless they have a serious issue, like a bladder problem, most dogs will not go to the bathroom in the crate. And again, this is why I stress, I need the crate to be the adequate size. If it's too big, what will happen is they'll walk to the other side and they'll go to the bathroom in that crate and they'll just go back in the other corner where they were sleeping and that's it. So it won't even affect them. But if it's a small enough crate, they will have no choice but to lie in it. They will not do that. Very few dogs will ever do that, okay? So again, the house training triangle is a very effective method. Crate training is the quickest way from point A to point B to train a dog to effectively be housebroken. So give this a try. Again, there's a whole chapter in my book about this. I hate plugging my book on the air, but the bottom line is this is why I wrote the book. There's an entire chapter in my book based on this, so go out and pick it up. Lucky Dog Lessons, of course. Train your dog in 7 days. You can pick it up wherever books are sold. So give it a try and let me know how it goes.
Hi, Nina. It's Brandon. How you doing?
I'm great.
Where are you calling from?
Independent, Missouri.
What about you? What do you got going on today?
I have a corgi. Boy, she just barks at every single thing. And I wish I could learn a technique to maybe stop some of that barking. So.
Okay. Now, is she doing this in your home?
Yes.
Is she doing it outside the home too, when you go on a walk, or mainly in the home?
Both, but I can definitely understand like going out on a walk, because she sees squirrels and birds and cats and different things. So that would make sense. But in the house, oh my.
Yeah, but in the house, she's more likely to bark because she's being territorial. I mean, dogs are, look, the one thing you have to understand about dogs and animals in general, but dogs specifically, they're very territorial animals. Let's back it up 15,000 years. Dogs were wolves, and wolves are very territorial of their pack. Their job is to protect their pack. Fast forward 15,000 years, here we are in 2020, and the dog is still protecting its pack. It's just the pack has changed. Instead of having four legs, you have two, I assume. And we are the new pack of the of these modern day domestic dogs that we've bred. And so I'm just trying to give you just a basic understanding of why the dog is barking in general. You can't stop the behavior. You can't stop the genetics, the DNA in the dog to cause it to bark. Now, what you can do is you can give a command to stop the barking, but it's only going to work on command. So in other words, if your dog starts barking, you can have a command and your dog will stop essentially after you say the command. But it's not going to just stop barking altogether now. The only way to do that is to literally debark the dog, and I would never recommend that. So the question remains, how do we get our dog to stop barking? One of the easiest ways that I find is one of the classic tricks that I use time and again on Lucky Dog is the penny bottle. I don't know if you've seen me use that.
The penny bottle, yes, I have.
Okay, now, the reason the penny bottle works is because the penny bottle, it's a distractive noise. So in other words, when the dog is barking at something, we call it in the dog training world targeting. It's targeting on something as a threat. And so it sees that threat, it says, "You're mine, I'm gonna stop you from breaking in the house." It assumes everything walking by your house, it's, you know, the mailman, the cable guy, any people just walking their dogs by, it's all a threat to your dog's.
Right.
All a threat to your dog's house. Your dog's job is to protect the house. So what happens when they do this targeting is all their senses start diminishing and they target on what they're barking. So in other words, the senses all around them, the peripheral senses, they start literally diminishing, and all their senses are heightened on that target. So they can only hear and see and smell what they're looking at, and everything around them is, they're just blind to you. They're deaf to you. They don't smell you, nothing. Their whole life becomes targeting that threat.
Okay.
So this is why the penny bottle works so well, because it's a disruptive noise that breaks through all that focus that they have on their target that they're going after. So the penny bottle, what I want you to do, all you have to do is put 20 pennies in a water bottle. It's very simple.
Okay.
Then make sure the bottle's empty, by the way. I've had people actually ask this, believe it or not. Empty water bottle. Just put 20 pennies in there. Put the cap back on. What's going to happen is when your dog starts barking excessively, now make sure it's excessively, not like the second she gives one bark. I'm sorry, he or she?
She.
She, not the second she gives one bark, but if she hasn't stopped in 20, 30 seconds, then it's excessive. Okay. So what you want to do is you want to shake the penny bottle, followed by the word quiet or knock it off or whatever your command is, whatever your verbal command is. You want to shake the penny bottle first, followed by your verbal command. And if you want to shake the penny bottle again after your verbal command, go right ahead, okay? Now, the reason I say penny bottle first, then verbal, is because it's very important that you shake the penny bottle to distract her from the barking. Then she's all of a sudden listening to you again. And she looks at you and you say the word quiet. The reason why you want to say the word quiet is because your goal at the end of a week or two of doing this is you want to every day shake less and say the word quiet more, to where eventually you don't need the penny bottle anymore. Now she starts barking, you just simply say the word quiet. And she recognizes that as the command, because the penny bottle is what essentially disrupted the barking and it got her to listen to you. And then you say the word quiet, that is the command that is the verbal command for her to stop. And that's it. She recognizes the quiet command. So the penny bottle is what's going to stop the barking initially, because she doesn't understand the word quiet. But after a week or two, all you have to do is simply say the word quiet in a nice firm voice, by the way, because remember, as she's barking, they're targeting. And the targeting means
right. All
their peripheral senses, vision, hearing, everything, they're targeting, and they're looking down a tunnel. And so all their senses are focused on that, their heightened senses on their target. They don't hear you. So that's why the penny bottle is very important in this particular situation. Okay. And after about a week or two,
okay,
you should be able to retire the penny bottle indefinitely.
sounds like a good plan. Okay, I'll definitely have to try this out.
All right, it's a very common question you have, by the way, and most people have excessive barkers. And this is why I always say 20 cents solves any problem, because it's true. I mean, you don't need to get all these expensive fancy tools or even spend $500 on a trainer every hour. Right. You can simply get 20 cents. And by the way, I'm almost cannibalizing my own job here, because essentially 20 cents is a lot cheaper than, you know, the hundreds of dollars that you know, good trainers cost.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day. Do you have a dog that sheds a lot? Well, I do. Every time I used to take my dog Coda to the groomer, they would use those de-shedding brushes that literally rip your dog's hair out from the bottom. Well, the hands-on gloves are much different, because all it's doing is removing the dog's hair that's already fallen off, but it's stuck inside the dog's coat, so it makes it much more comfortable and enjoyable for not only you and your dog. When I used to pull out those old classic de-shedding brushes, Coda would literally start running away from me and I'd have to chase him. It was like an episode of Benny Hill. But now when I pull out the hands-on gloves, he's like, oh, it's time to get groomed, baby. See for yourself why hands-on gloves are animal preferred and outperforming all other products across the board. Use coupon code Brandon for 20% off and free shipping only at handsongloves.com. That's handsongloves.com, handsongloves.com. You should pick them up today. They're really cool gloves.
I'm sure you all know this, but we can't be with our dogs 24/7. So if you have a dog that scratches, barks, or shakes more than normal, how would you even know? Well, Shure Pet Care's new Anemo Pet Behavior Tracker monitors your dog's every bark, scratch, shake, and itch, which could mean your dog is in distress or has an underlying issue. Plus, Anemo understands your dog's sleep patterns too, which is actually really cool, because my dogs really don't sleep. They keep me up all night. So if your dog has poor night's sleep, your Shure Pet Care Anemo app will let you know so you can find out what's causing the problem. Anemo is lightweight and it's collar mounted to help you spot changes in your dog's behavior, alerting you that it might just be time to visit the veterinarian. Anemo, monitoring your dog's every bark, scratch, shake, and itch. To find out more, go to surepetcare.com. That's SurePetCare.com. And for 20% off, who doesn't like a discount, be sure to enter promo code Brandon in the box. That's 20% off when you enter Brandon in the promo code box. Go see him right now. Really cool company.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very special treat for you today. In my opinion, this is going to be the most popular of all the podcasts I do, because we're talking with a gentleman who's been in the pet food industry for 30 years. He's, in my opinion, he's considered the guru. He's also the founder of Lucy Pet Products. He's also the founder of the Lucy Pet Foundation, which to date, they've done over 27,000 free spay and neuter for dogs and cats in Southern California. I mean, if that is not a good foundation to donate your money to, you need to look yourself in the mirror and think twice about your life. We're talking to Mr. Joey Herrick. Joey, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Oh, Brandon, thanks for asking me.
So let me ask you, I'm going to ask you just the obvious basics first and foremost. So you've been in the pet food industry for about 30 years now, and a lot of people might not know this about you, but you created a very, very popular food company known as Natural Balance. When did you create that?
1988. That's when I first went to actor Dick Van Patten and said, hey, I want to start a pet food company. Would you like to become a partner? And he said, yes, I love animals. I said, I know you do. And that's how we started.
So was it one of those things you just started like in your garage and it just built up to this empire that it became?
Well, kind of like that. I mean, not in my garage, but I mean,
trunk of your car. Yeah,
I did deliver. I was the only one delivering pet food in the Southern California area out of a 1983 Mercedes. You know, except the problem with that is you can only put 3,000 pounds so many times before your springs say, that's enough, get a van.
The axles, yeah, just completely fall off on the freeway.
Yeah.
You were the first one to do a lot of things in this industry. I want to make sure I get this correct. The duck and potato formula, that was your idea?
In the retail side, we pioneered duck and potato, sweet potato and venison, green pea and duck, limited ingredient diets. I actually trademarked L.I.D.
Define for the audience, what exactly does limited ingredient mean? Like how many ingredients defines limited?
Well, generally it's a one protein source as opposed to multiple protein sources, and the carbohydrates are limited too. So it was developed for dogs that have allergy. It was really a veterinary diet to which our team, we made it better and actually sold it retail, and it became a very, very big product.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you sold that company in 2013, correct?
Yes. 2013, July.
Okay. So since then, you've really gotten a part of it, and you started a new company now, Lucy Pet.
Yes. Well, when I sold Natural Balance, I knew I had to give back because dogs and cats gave me and my family an unbelievable life. So I had to return the favor, and I decided that I needed to have spay and neuter trucks. And so I got a spay and neuter truck. I got a surgical team, and we started doing free spay and neuters here in Southern California. I spent about $2 million doing that. And the purpose was then, that's about almost 6 years ago, they were euthanizing 80,000 dogs and cats a week in the United States. And the only way you're going to get those numbers down is spay and neuter. So I wanted to do my part. So our crew went out and we started going to certain areas and doing it for free.
Now, that's unbelievable that people actually, they can get their pets spayed and neutered for free. Really quick, before we move on from that, what's the website they can check that out, the foundation?
Oh, yeah, just go to lucypetfoundation.org. You can see all kinds of things about it.
All right, if you guys can donate to that organization too, it's an incredible organization. Every once in a while, I'm driving in Los Angeles and I see there's a Lucy Pet Foundation vehicle and they're giving the free spay and neuters, and I swear the line is just stretched around the block. It looks like there's like a movie premiere.
Yeah, no, a lot of people come to. Well, we do about 5,000 free surgeries a year.
Okay, so Joey, here you are, 2013. You sell Natural Balance. Why would you want to get back in the industry? What made you want to start another dog food brand again, considering the fact that it's a lot of hard work? I mean, at your age, not that you're, you know, I understand.
Hey, what do you mean 20, by that?
And not that, you know, you're 27 years old, just like me. But, I mean, wouldn't you just want to retire and say, you know, I did my part. I did my part for the animals. Lucy Pet Foundation is doing phenomenal. That's it. I'm out. What made you want to start all over again?
Well, I'm that type of personality. So, I mean, I'm a certain age, but I think I'm 40. So, because I don't feel any different. And I have a lot of energy and I have a lot of ideas. And, you know, I started the foundation right away. We sold the company in July. By October of that year, 2013, we're already doing spay and neuters, and I got my surgical staff. And one thing led to another. Kind of missed the industry. My wife wanted to do shampoo. I thought, okay, fine, let's do some shampoo. So we did some shampoo. And then somebody very high up in the industry said to me, "You're one of the most creative guys in the industry. Come up with something for litter." And I go, "Litter? Cat litter?" And he goes, "Yes, cat litter." "Really? Okay, let me think about it." Well, I actually created a bag that I patented in 49 countries, a package, and it's a really, really cool bag. And so that kind of led to other things. And so now we're selling litter. And it got to the point where, you know, I didn't know what to feed my own dogs anymore because things change with everything. And some of the top nutrition guys in the industry said to me, and these are the top guys, I mean, these are the brainiacs of the industry, said, "Are you going to be at the trade show?" I said, "Yes." And so, "Can we take you to dinner?" I said, "Okay, great." So we go to dinner and they said, "Hey, Joey, look, it's really nice you have your litter and you have your shampoo. That's nice. But you were a leader in the pet industry. You led it for many years. When are you going to come back?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because my non-compete ended 3 weeks ago." and I said, I've been looking and there's so many brands today and it's, and I know who's telling the truth and who's not telling the truth. And it irks me what's going on. And I said, "Well, unless I can lead it, I don't want to get back in it, you know?"
Yeah.
I mean, I got to lead it and I got to make it better. It's got to improve animals' lives. So they told me, "Well, we have something for you." Because you ever heard of Dr. George C. Fahey? I said, "Well, I know years ago, he used to consult to some companies and those companies were really, really good foods in those days." I said, "I know that was Dr. Fahey." They said, "Well, that's the guy. And he's got 40 years of research that he's sitting on. And he doesn't really want to just give it out there."
So this gentleman, Dr. Fahey, has he created other foods on the market or?
Yes, he's been influential in a lot of different brands throughout the years. He's had a very distinguished career. He's one of the guys in the industry behind the scenes. And he's never, ever, all the years, put his name next to a company or done any advertising until now, because this is his life's work.
Now, the companies that he has developed food for, are these big respected companies?
They were big boys, yes.
Yeah,
big companies. And but you know what happens a lot with big companies is, and why he was, you know, sitting on this technology and all his years of work is because when it goes to a lot of big companies, the first thing they think about is, "Oh, really? How do we make this cheaper?
Money.
Cheaper,
money,
cheaper."
Money, money.
And so he was
follow the money.
Follow the money. Yep. So these top nutrition people in the industry said, "Listen, we know how you were in your other company. You're always trying to get it better and better and better. We we think the two of you would make a great team. Would you be interested? I said, well, explain to me how it works, because it's got to be, game changing. And they explained to me how it works. And it was unbelievable what they told me and then what he had figured out. So the end result, Dr. Fahey and I got together and we hit it off. And we said, okay, we're going to do this. And we've tested it for the last, 2.5 years in all kinds of different settings with all kinds of different dogs. And it just works.
Yeah.
And it's a game changer.
Now, what exactly makes Lucy Pet stand out from any other brands out there?
Well, a lot of reasons. One, but the main thing with Dr. Fahey's science and the fact that he discovered, well, this is a lot of companies that have probiotics in their foods. You know, in a lot of cases, there's not enough probiotics in the bag to do anything for your dog. It's marketing. Pet food is marketing BS at its best, continuously. And it really irks me that that's what it's become.
Is that true for all the stuff they add to?
Well, you have to have vitamin minerals in it. If you don't, I mean, you won't meet AFCO protophiles and your dog's not going to be healthy. Your dog needs at least 43 essential nutrients, with vitamins and minerals and everything. So it has to be in there.
Okay, so that's true with every dog?
Yeah.
They all need 43 vitamins and minerals.
They all need the proper balanced nutrition. It has to be in there. So you have to put those things in it. But Fahey, he just had this whole thing about gut health and found out, like probiotics, they won't really do that much. Like if you're using a probiotic and you go over to, the store, you get it out of the refrigerated section and it says 100 billion on it. You see 100 billion. Boy, that's a lot of probiotics. Yeah. Well, yeah, it has to be 100 billion because 80 billion isn't getting through your digestive system.
Yeah.
So it's the same with dog food. So Fahey figured out that, with prebiotic. And when we first started this, not one pet food company was talking about gut health. Mm-hmm. Like when we started 2.5 years ago, nobody mentioned gut health. We were the first. And nobody, even for human, was talking about prebiotic fiber. But Fahey figured out that with prebiotic fiber, which is food, so it's pumpkin, quinoa, but and certain ingredients, but in the right ratio, it gets through the system, gets down into the large intestine, and what happens to it? Well, it ferments and it creates short chain fatty acids, if you remember high school science class. And that's actually becomes the food for all the natural probiotics that are in your system. So you're not just feeding one strain, lactobacillus or something else. You're feeding hundreds of different strains naturally from the inside out. So it's all about health from the inside out. And Dr. Fahey figured all that stuff out. And he's a very buttoned up person. I mean, if you don't have white papers on it, it's been published in scientific fact, he doesn't want to hear about it.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you just a few questions about the basic questions that a lot of people have nowadays. Number one, let's talk about raw food.
Okay.
Big subject, especially years ago. I remember because I actually fed my Jack Russell years ago raw food. I thought he did very well in it, but a lot of research has come out saying that raw food is not the best diet to feed your dog. Why would I feed my dog kibble over raw food, considering the fact that raw food seems more like a whole food as opposed to kibble, which is processed?
Well, let's talk process. You get a lot of the raw food companies say, oh, kibble, it's so overly processed, it's this, it's that. Mm-hmm. Well, kibble is actually extruded. It's heated up between 200 and 300 degrees, right? And so it goes through the process and it's heated 200 to 300 degrees for about 12 to 15 minutes total, right? And I get a kick out of the people that, the advertising, the marketing people that say, oh, kibble is no good because it cooks all the nutrients out. Come on, guys, can we just talk being sensible for a little bit? Like I make turkey on Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. right? So I put that turkey in the oven. It's in there for 350 degrees for about 7 hours. Do you think there's no nutrients coming out of that turkey because it was in the oven for 7 hours and 350 degrees? Of course there's nutrients. I'm pretty healthy and I don't eat my food raw. I eat it cooked, right? So just cooking the food doesn't get all the nutrients out of it. So that's really a big falsehood that they like to perpetuate, and it's not true.
Okay. So let's say I go to the store, I get a breast of chicken, I get a potato, and I get some carrots.
Right.
Let's say I want to make that for my dog tonight for a meal. Why would I feed kibble over that?
Well,
isn't that the purest form of food for a dog?
No.
I mean, why would I choose kibble?
Well, why you wouldn't do that and why you couldn't do that long term is because your dog needs 43 essential nutrients. You know, there's a lot to a dog food. You know, there's protein, fats, fibers, the fiber, soluble, insoluble. I mean, all kinds of things that have to come together, and his vitamin and minerals. So if you just fed that, he wouldn't be getting his vitamin and minerals and everything else. He wouldn't be getting it. And also, I know raw food. When I had my other company, I fed all the big zoos in the country. I fed the San Diego Zoo. I fed the Brookfield Zoo, the Central Park Zoo. I fed all those zoos raw food because I'm feeding lions and tigers. And I get a big kick out of the whole raw thing. And certain pet food companies that when your dog was in the wild, well, you know, you feed your dog like a wolf. Your dog hasn't been a wolf for 12,000 years. I mean, come on. Don't ignore a scientific fact. There's actually 36 specific DNA traits that make the dog different than the wolf. 36 DNA traits scientifically proven. And 10 of those traits are actually in digestion, which means a dog can take a carbohydrate and extract out all the glucose it needs for brain function and everything else way better than it can a piece of meat. You know, so in my opinion, I think kibble is a much better way to go. But the problem with kibble, and there is a problem with kibble, because three things. Like, you know, there's a lot of things going on today in the industry and against kibble and foods and everything. But, you know, there's three things that can make kibble really not very good. And one, who formulated it? Because that's step number one. And I actually tell people, whatever brand you're feeding, call the company. Ask them, hey, who formulated the food I'm feeding my dog? Because you want to know that. Because is it a leading expert? Is it somebody who's got years and years of experience that actually understands how protein sources interact together and all these ingredients interact together and don't cause other bad things to go on? So who did your formulas? Ask the company. If they want to tell you, you know, find a company that'll tell you. I mean, you call us, we'll tell you who did our formulas. We got the two best people in the freaking business to do it who have so many years of understanding. The other situation is the quality of the ingredients going in. Mm-hmm. If you could have a great formula, but if you're putting in cheap ingredients, forget about it.
Define cheap ingredients.
Okay, I pioneered duck and potato, right? So years ago. So I wanted to actually see how potatoes were being made. So I called and said, hey, I want to tour the potato plant. So I'm going through this potato plant and I got my hairnet on. I got my white gloves. I got my white coat because this is where all the potato chip guys go to get their food, right? So I'm touring it and I'm standing in front of this big machine where all these potato flakes are falling on the floor, right? So the guy's got a squeegee and he squeegees them into a big pile. And then he's got a shovel and he puts them into a bin. And I said to him, hey, what's going on with that? He goes, oh, that's for pet food. I said, that's for pet food? How can that be for pet food? One, it's contaminated. It's on the ground. Two, I saw a little piece of wood and a screw in it. How can that be for pet food?
So you're saying this is a true story?
Oh, it's a true story.
So you're saying, and I'm assuming this is a lot of dog food companies do this. So you're saying they just take the crap, the leftover stuff that cannot be sold to humans, and they turn it into dog food.
That happens. And when I said to that,
that's disgusting, by the way.
Well, it is.
Now, how do I know as a basic consumer, not myself, as feeding my dogs, how do I know where the potato came from?
You don't.
Does it say on the bag, like, this is human grade ingredients?
No, you don't. And when I called that guy out on it, he said, oh, you don't have to worry about that. The company we sell it to, they sift it and clean it before it goes to the pet food plants. Right.
How do you sift and clean all the crap from the bottom of the...
Oh, listen, I could tell you stories that would, you know, curl your eyebrows. I mean, yeah. it's just wrong things. But see, I could buy those potatoes that came off the floor and handle that way for about today, like 38 cents a pound. Or I can buy potatoes for 62 cents a pound. And those potatoes you and I can eat. But on the bag, it only says potatoes. So you don't know if I spent 38 cents a pound or if I spent 62 cents a pound.
So Lucy Pet, they obviously use the potatoes humans can eat, correct?
Of course. I know every trick that everybody does.
Yeah.
And that's the key to everything.
And I'll assume it cuts into your profits, correct?
Oh, yeah. We make an expensive product, and I don't sell it as much money as some of the guys do because I said it's too expensive. Normal people can't afford it. Yeah. So we run on a lower profit margin.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's very noble of anybody to do that in business because especially it sounds like the dog food industry is the Wild West.
Well, this is not about, see, you get to my age. I mean, I'm 65. I think I'm 45.
I thought you were 27, but go on.
Oh, thank you for that. There'll be a money in your envelope.
And there'll be a lot of direct messages to you in my inbox.
Yeah. And, you know, it gets to a point where I've been very, very blessed. I mean, I had a successful music career. That was great. I actually started the first ever canned chili. I started a chili line in 1984 with Phyllis Diller. And so because I did a TV show with her and she made chili on the set. I said, Phyllis, this is the greatest chili I've ever had in my life. You should put it on the market. She said, Joey, I don't have time for that. You do it. I said, okay, how hard could it be? Well, it was successful. I had it all over Southern California. And I was the first person to put chicken in a can of chili. And then when I told the chili manufacturer, they said, no, you don't want to put chicken in that. This is 1984. Chili is a beef industry. Everybody wants beef. Nobody wants chicken. I said, well, I live in LA. We're health conscious and I think chicken will work. Well, guess what? It worked.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it seems like chili nowadays, you can find pretty much any
chicken.
Probably beyond that.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, that's how I started. So it gets to the point where you go, okay, you know, I did music, I did this, and it was a privilege for me to go to work every day for 25 years with dogs and cats.
Yeah.
And to me, anybody who does not understand in the pet food industry or the pet industry that what a privilege and a pleasure it is to work with dogs and cats, you need to get out of the industry.
So, yeah. Yeah. It,
so for me, this is about legacy for me. So I hope to be around for till I'm 90 and still cooking, you know, doing really well. But did I build successful companies? Okay. Whoop-de-doo. Did I actually make animals' lives better? So that's why I have my spay and neuter bus. That's why we've done 27,000, you know, spay and neuters. And now I want to make animals' lives better with no BS nutrition.
Does your pet struggle with missing you while you're at work? Have they reached their senior years and need a little help feeling like themselves again? Or are you simply just looking for an awesome daily supplement for your currently healthy dog? Well, Pet Relief is on a mission to change what healthy means for pets. As the number one most trusted pet CBD company out there, they're doing just that. Their line of all-natural, safe, and organic supplements are perfect for pets, no matter what their age or health status is. From CBD hemp oils to bite-sized supplements called Edibites, capsules, topicals, and hemp protein bars, there's a holistic option for every one of your four-legged friends. And the best part is, their website provides a usage calculator where you can get a custom product recommendation based on your pet's specific needs. To give Pet Relief a try, simply use my promo code Brandon for 20% off your total purchase. To shop now and read more about CBD for your pet, check out Pet Relief's website, www.petrelief.com. That's spelled PETRELEAF.com. And by the way, one last note, I use their CBD on my dog Lulu. She's a 14 and a half old Chihuahua, and I've literally watched her life do a 180. They have amazing CBD products, so go check them out right now.
Okay, so here's something I bet you all didn't know. Dogs like to chew. Yeah, you didn't know that, right? They love to chew on everything. Trust me, here at the ranch, the dogs that I train, they pretty much chew on whatever fits in their mouth, shoes, furniture. So because of this, I love to give them something that's both safe and won't make a mess. So Wondersnax is the new alternative to rawhide, leveraging a patent-pending safe hide process. What makes these so great is they're highly digestible, they're much easier on the gums, and they leave no nasty mess like your traditional rawhide. Wondersnax are available in a variety of flavors and sizes to meet your dog's likes, and they are available now at PetSmart. Go to your local pet store, or you can find them online at PetSmart.com. Wondersnax is wonder like it's spelled, and snacks, S-N-A-X-X. So go check them out right now. I know you people with puppies and young dogs that like to chew a lot, especially when you got a boxer and you're going to need something like this. Go check them out right now. All right. I always throw boxers under the bus.
Yeah, I noticed that.
everyone else notices too. I got to start throwing another breed of dog under the bus. What else chews a lot?
The terriers.
The terriers.
I don't know.
I got to stop doing that. The boxer adoption rate at the shelter is going to start going down because of me.
You're going to be picketing down the end of the driveway.
Grain-free has become a big talking point, especially in the dog food industry.
Oh, sure.
Why would I make my dog go grain-free as opposed to feeding them grain?
Well, you know what? Depends on your dog. I mean, grain-free started because, you know, certain dogs were having problems with grain. You know, I mean, we at Lucy, we make grain free. We make with grain. Depends on your dog. You know, I actually, with all this heart stuff started, I had a customer call and say, Mr. Herrick, you know, I'm nervous about the DCM and all this stuff. And so I explained it to her. But she said to me, she says, my dog had nothing but problems until I went on your, actually, she went on the duck and potato. She said, I've been on it for 2 years. My dog has never been healthier. All the problems he used to have is gone. And I don't want to change. I said, well, listen, you don't have to change. Everything's, your dog's doing great on it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it's funny, when that first came out, and actually our Dr. Fahey's on a committee, they meet every other Friday, and that's all they discuss. And when it first came out, they started talking about the foods are low in taurine, right? Taurine's an essential amino acid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all talking about, yeah, they're low in taurine. Well, that kind of got blown up because then they found out there was dogs, their taurine level was okay, but they still pushing taurine. But I'm the guy that actually put taurine for the first time in a commercial pet food. I led that whole thing with taurine, hell, 20 years ago. And not because I was so smart. I was only smart enough to listen to Dr. Edith Van Martens, who was my veterinarian nutrition, who also did human brain research at UCLA. And she came to me and said, listen, I've been doing research. And back in those days, you would only put taurine in cat food because cats don't make their own taurine. And if they don't have it in there, cats will die if you don't have the proper level. And so she said to me, she said, listen, I've been doing my own research and nobody puts taurine in dog food. You know, this goes back a lot of years. And she said, but I have Dobermans and Dobermans are prone to DCM problems. And she said, I've been doing my research and I think that when they're stressed, they don't have enough taurine. They don't make it enough when they're stressed, whether so maybe they're stressed out certain dogs when you leave them alone or, you know, other things that stress dogs out. And I said, well, what's the harmful effects? Can we put too much in? Can we? So she had all that data, which we looked at it. And I said, okay, you know what? Let's lead it. At our first advertisement, we actually used her Dobermans in it. And we were the first company to actually put taurine into dog food. And then throughout the years, everybody copied it and put taurine in, which was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And then, but there were still some guys not putting taurine in, you know, just a few years ago, then the DCM thing. Now everybody's putting taurine in like it's, you know, they've always done it. I started it. So,
Yeah. So going back to what you said a few minutes ago about the grain-free issue. So you're saying the bottom line is it depends on the dog breed type.
Yeah. If your dog's allergic to certain things, I mean, like that's why we use brown rice in some products, you know, so we have grain, we have without grain, depends on the dog. And
what exactly is considered a grain though? Like is quinoa a grain?
No. Well,
because it says ancient grain.
Some people, a lot of people will argue with you and say that quinoa, which is what we use, is an ancient grain, but technically it's a seed.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a fine line, but it's technically a seed.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to happen, it's going to be very interesting because especially with when they came out and knocked all these certain ingredients, you know, I pioneered those ingredients and they don't have a clue in the world at this point. They're all doing their research and trying to find out, but you are going to find out that they're trying now to look into the three things I told you about. They're now looking into formulations, ingredients. Extremely important. So if you know, remember we were talking about great formula, then you got to have great ingredients. And then and the other thing that you have to have in order to make kibble correctly is you have to have a good operator because you can have a great formula and great ingredients and still get side railed if the operator working the machine isn't good. So you got to have all three of those components. And if you have all three of those components in fine working order, well then, you know, the kibble can't be beat.
Yeah.
But you got to have all three of those things. And unfortunately, what's happening with today, you know, it's shameful. I mean, go look at the fraud list. I don't know if that's a horrible thing, but
now explain to people what the fraud list is.
The fraud list is some attorneys analyzed some food companies and found out that they weren't putting on the label what's really in it.
Like what? Give some examples.
Well, and this is what
without giving up companies. Obviously.
Oh no, I wouldn't do that.
Nobody's getting sued here today.
Yeah.
By the way, the list is actually public. I mean, it's you can read it on you could read it online.
Yeah, I'm not telling anything that you can't just go online and find.
Yeah.
But here's what irks me about that. And say, for example, if you're a veterinarian and you talk to your customer, your dog's scratching and he's got welts on him, and you say to him, as a veterinarian, listen, I think we need to do a panel on your dog. And that'll tell us, you know, if he's allergic to something. And so you do the panel, right? So your client spends the money, you do the panel. And he says, yeah, we got the test results back. Your dog's allergic to pork and beef. And so tell you what, put them on a lamb and rice diet, and do not feed them table scraps. Do not feed them any pork, any beef. And this should clear up in about 3 weeks. And I'll see you back here in, 3 or 4 weeks. So the client comes back. The dog still looks the same as he has from a few weeks before. So the vet is confused because, well, did you feed a lamb and rice diet? Yes, I fed a lamb and rice diet. Well, then lo and behold, if you look at the fraud list, they analyze these companies and there's pork, beef, and turkey in the lamb.
So you're saying these companies were actually lying about what they were putting in. They were saying it's a lamb and a pumpkin, just for example. But they were also finding traces of beef, chicken, and a lot of other proteins in there.
Yeah, and actually,
why would they do that? Why wouldn't they just stick with one protein?
Because it's where they're buying ingredients from. Some of the companies, and especially some of the companies, the big companies have bought out little companies. I mean, they don't understand the pet industry, and you got a guy up in a high rise and he's got to buy products and, oh, this guy has a cheaper price. So they go with that guy, but you don't really understand the industry.
So you're saying what's happened to the industry recently is, or not, probably not recently, for probably decades, is big business that has nothing to do with pets have bought these pet brands, these pet foods, and now are being managed, run by kind of like high rise, executive CEOs instead of like animal people that have been doing this from passion their whole lives.
Right. And they don't know. So, this guy's, I need 15 tons of this. This guy's, cheaper. So they buy from him.
So it just becomes just a greed industry. Eventually.
Right. And then, there was a big lawsuit like 4 years ago regarding byproducts done to a major company who had no idea that their supplier was selling them junk. And they were shocked that their supplier was selling them junk. And, the supplier got sued, and fined and everything. You need to follow through where your ingredients come from.
Yeah.
And you have, I've been in it for so long. Things happened to me when I was growing up in the business. But once you learn, you can't let that happen. You got to know and trace everything back to the source of where your product's coming from. If you want to have a good product.
Yeah. Now, what about the balance of nutrition in a food? So for example, high protein diets were really popular and still are. They've been popular for a long time. How much of that is marketing? And by the way, how safe is that for a dog to have a high protein diet when they need carbs, they need other things in their diet, and it's not balanced correctly, from what I know?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I looked into high protein diets, 20 years ago, and I couldn't find anything that would support it. Dr. Van Marthens, my vet and nutritionist, at my other company, always hated it scientifically. And so I never did it. And so today, it's a trend. So people feed high protein. Mm. Well, here's what's wrong in our opinion and Dr. Fahey's opinion with high protein. Some of these foods are 40% protein. And they're going back to feed your dog like a wolf. Your dog's not a wolf, so your dog doesn't go out and hunt all day. Your dog just walks to the pantry and looks at you and gives you the eyes and you feed him whatever he wants. So a dog needs, say a dog needs 20% protein, right? So he eats a 40% protein. Well, what happens to the protein? He doesn't need the other 20%. So it goes down through the system and sits in the bowel, right? And what happens? Before it gets out of the body, it turns into ammonia and endoles and amines, cancer-causing substances.
Is this true?
Yes.
I had no idea.
It's true for people. So what happens? So now you got ammonia and endoles and amines and phenols in the system. And it hasn't left the system yet, so it's absorbing into the tissue. So there's been white papers and all kinds of things on this for people, and it turns into cancer. So why would you do that? Plus the fact and the vets don't like it, high protein is very tough on kidneys for dogs. Yet that doesn't stop everybody from doing high protein because there's so many new foods coming out today. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Everybody wants into it because it's a $30 billion business. And they're not-
It also sounds like the Wild West too.
It
seems like an industry that's not heavily regulated. Am I wrong there?
Well, it needs more regulation, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this needs to be, the truth needs to come out. People need to sleep at night. And I don't know how they can do that when you're actually making formulas that don't have any science behind it. Or if it does have science, it has science that says, that's not healthy in the long term, yet they keep making it. They don't care. They want the money. And that really irks me of what's happening with a lot of people in the industry.
So what do you see as the biggest threat to the industry right now? What irks you? What keeps you up at night as far as what you're seeing in the industry? Obviously, greed. That's a big thing for you.
Greed. So many people getting into the industry that don't really have backgrounds. All these new foods coming out that really don't have the science behind. There's some foods coming out that have like 8 proteins together, but there's no data on how 8 proteins interact together. Kind of like simple things if you have high cholesterol, they put you on a statin drug, right? And it's really interesting. So if you get on a statin, what happens? The statin sucks out CoQ10. So you really need to take CoQ10 if you're taking a statin drug. And some doctors tell you, a lot of doctors sometimes will not tell you and just put you on it. But, you know, then you'll get muscle pain and all kinds of things. But if you take the CoQ10 to balance it out, you're fine. And so some of these formulas, which I know that the FDA is now looking into, and they're actually trying to get the formulas from the companies to see how all these formulas are put together to make sure that they're balanced correctly and they work. And so that's a big issue today with that stuff. And to just get on a trend and you don't really care about the science of it because you want to get on that marketing trend of a $30 billion industry and you're making foods, that ain't right. I got an interesting story I'll tell you. There's tons of them like this. Whole dried egg. Whole dried egg is a great product. I mean, we all know eggs are great and that it's a great amino acid profile. I mean, eggs are good and healthy. So a friend of mine, a guy named Jerry Ball, who years ago when I was just getting started, I actually called him up to get whole dried egg because I used to make these dog food rolls, which were very popular. And I needed whole dried egg. So I called Jerry to get eggs from him. And he said, okay, well, you need a truckload. I said, oh, no. Can I get like a half a pallet? And he started laughing, a half a pallet. Yeah, I'm just getting started. I don't need a truckload. And he was nice enough to sell me a half a pallet. And throughout the years, you know, we grew and I started buying truckloads. But I've been friends with him forever. But he's a purist in the industry too. So he had a whole dried egg business. All of a sudden, all the big companies stopped buying whole dried egg from Jerry, right? So Jerry's business was going in the toilet. So he finds out that there's a competitor came in and they're undercutting him by 20 cents a pound. And he's going, well, wait a minute, I don't make that much margin. How in the world can I get undercut by 20 cents a pound? So he did some research. Well, he found out that a competitor came and they were actually using hatchery waste. And hatchery waste is when the egg splats on the ground, right? And the yolk runs all around. Well, they come and scoop it all up, right? And they process it and dry it and becomes whole dried egg. But really different from Jerry's, because Jerry's whole dried egg, the eggs would come in, they crack the eggs, you know, throw the shells away, and you have really whole dried egg.
So it's a lot like your potato story earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Except this is even worse. So Jerry, you know, business is going in the toilet. So he takes to Kansas State University, he takes his whole dried egg, he takes this competitor's product, right, and says, test this. So they test it on piglets, right? So all of Jerry's piglets on his whole dried egg grew up to be healthy and happy. On the competitor's product, they didn't have such luck. I actually talked to Jerry today. They actually didn't make it. Right. So what happened? Well, in the kind of like us as humans, like if we have breast milk when we're little babies, you know, the colostrum. Well, for the piglets, it's immunoglobulin. Right. So the immunoglobulin in Jerry's whole dried egg was very high. On the competitors that was scraped off the ground, very low levels. Unhealthy. So that's what did it. So Jerry actually petitioned the industry and said, hey, this is not a level playing field. You need to fix this. And all they came back with was, we're going to call it dried egg product. So when you see on your label today, dried egg product, that's how dried egg product got there from whole dried egg. So then Jerry said, well, wait a minute, that's not fair because I'm using whole dried egg, cracking the egg, throwing away the shell, getting everything. If you're going to put that on a label, it needs to have an asterisk. Hatchery waste. Well, didn't happen.
Well, that was my other question. So are there any ingredients in bags of dog foods that we can just, let's say everyone listening right now, if you could tell them to go to your bag of dog food and there's an ingredient in there that when we read it, we don't really know what it means. It's hard to pronounce, but the definition of it means something really gross? Is that common in dog foods?
Well, some of those ingredients, most of the ingredients that you can read, that we would read that we don't know, are actually just vitamins and minerals.
Okay.
And so.
But is there something in dog foods that's very common? Like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of skepticism I don't know if it was a conspiracy theory years ago, but they were saying certain pet foods had actual, they recycled dead dogs in their dog food. Is that just a conspiracy?
That's something different. Well, actually, even in recent times, you've seen there was a major recall a couple of years ago with a canned food that had pentobarbital in it. How does pentobarbital get in a pet food?
And what is that again?
Pentobarbital is what they use in shelters to euthanize animals. They can use it to euthanize cows or horses, you know, but you euthanize animals with it.
Yep.
So how in the world can pentobarbital get in a pet food? Well, that's two reasons. One, you got a guy in the glass tower buying ingredients and the other guy's cheaper and they start buying ingredients from this guy who really should not be in the pet food industry because he's not ethical. And so he's getting, you know, animal carcasses and various things and who've been euthanized with pentobarbital, and he's using them selling to companies. A guy's buying an ingredient from somebody who you think it's this, but that guy's not honorable. So he's putting all kinds of stuff in it. That's kind of like we talked earlier about the fraud list. How could in a lamb and rice diet there be pork, beef, and chicken and turkey?
But how is there no testing for this? Or how is this industry not more heavily regulated to where they can test to see that your ingredients are what you say, and if there's anything else in there, they can test to see exactly what it is. Well, because in my opinion, look, if I'm buying a dog food where I want it to be salmon, I want to make sure it's just salmon,
right?
Not beef, not chicken, and definitely not dog in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's it all comes down to people need to do their research. You research that company, you research that president, you research what their beliefs are, what that company is about. And you need to believe in the company because you're buying a company, and it only is as good as who's ever at the top. If the guy at the top runs a loose ship and doesn't really care, and it's about bottom line profits, who knows what you're going to get?
Yeah,
that's just how it is. It's sad. It's wrong, and it's one of the reasons I came back into the industry because this is about legacy, and I happen to have a lot of dogs and cats. I love my animals, and they keep getting the short end of the stick, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I think one of the greatest interesting things that happened was your story. If you remember back when I called you about 3 years ago or so.
I remember.
And I called you and I said, hey, I'm getting back into the pet food industry. I'm going to lead it once again. But we're doing it with gut health. And I told you about Fahey. And I did not know when I called you to try this product.
Want me to tell the story?
Sure.
I'll make it quick. So this is a few years back. Joey was still in the development process of Lucy Pet Formulas for Life Food. And I happened to tell him a story, and he said, I think I have the solution for you. Let's give this a try. So the story is, I was dealing with a German Shepherd at the time, and he had a GI problem. And so basically the problem with his gut was he was not absorbing nutrients at an efficient rate. Apparently there was a lot of inflammation in his gut. And so if I had to put it on a scale, of 1% to 100%, he was only absorbing about maybe 25 to 30% of the nutrients in his gut. The rest were just getting wasted. So I took him to the vet, and the vet put him on a few medications, and they said, let's try this again in a month. And so I put him on the meds. A month later, I went back to my vet and we did some tests, and there was really no change. So we did this time and again over the course of probably about 5-6 months. And eventually there was no change. And that's when Joey and I started talking, and he's like, try this dog food. The formula is specializing in gut health. He goes, this is a perfect opportunity to see if this product works. And I said, cool, I've got nothing else to lose. So I went ahead and put the dog on the Lucy Pet formulas, and I cold turkeyed the dog off the medication altogether. So I took the dog
back into the vet about a month later, and the vet's did some tests, and he's like, wow, he's absorbing nutrients. The inflammation in the stomach is gone. This is amazing. The medications worked. And I was like, actually, no, I took the dog off all the medications. So it was a big moment. It was a moment of clarity for me, because I'm a big fan of doing something natural as opposed to I'm against medications of any kind unless it's absolutely necessary. Now, look, I'm gonna put this out there for the veterinarian. He did what he was trained to do, and I'm not saying medications would not work on any other dog and in that situation. But I always like to go natural at first. If a food could do it, that's why. I was a believer at that time, because once I saw that this food actually helped literally, and I don't know if it's cured, but it helped him substantially. Now he could absorb nutrients at an efficient rate. It helped his GI. It helped his gut. I was a believer right there. And that's where you and I really started talking a lot more.
Yeah, and that was all Dr. Fahey's 40 years of research.
I guess the final question is, where can people find more information on what's in their food, A, and B, what's the best food for their specific dog? I mean, is there different types of foods for different kinds of dogs, or can one food work for every kind of dog out there?
Well, some companies take that approach. And I never did it with my other company for 25 years. I was always life stages.
Okay, so your food works for every life stage. I see in the aisles of the food of the pet stores, you have food for puppies, you have food for adults, and you have food for seniors. Is that marketing or is that true?
Well, in a lot of instances, it's marketing. I always like to, Dr. Van Martin's always used to tell me this when I asked about that. Are we going to come out with a senior food when I have my other company? And for 25 years, we never had, we just had all life stages. And she said to me, Joey, when you were 4 years old and you ate an apple, right? And when you ate a steak, you ate a steak. Yeah. She said, when you're 40 years old, you ate an apple and you ate a steak. Yeah. And when get to be 80 years old, you're going to eat an apple and you're going to eat a steak. I said, yeah. He says, do you think there's an old person steak or an old person's apple? She says, no, there isn't. It's really just a matter of adjusting the caloric intake.
But what about is maybe I have it wrong. Is it true that older people need less protein and more fiber? Is that true?
Well, you'll get less when you eat less. Just like reduced calorie, for example. I had a reduced calorie for all those years, and then finally I came out with a product that was really designed for dogs and cats to lose weight. But because we came out with reduced calorie because we couldn't tell people, look, just put your hand in the bowl, take out 20 chunks, take out 20 kibbles, and you just reduce the calorie.
Just feed less, yeah.
But they don't do that. They want to see reduced calorie, you know.
So you're saying any if the food is designed correctly, you don't need to buy a puppy formula, an adult or a senior formula. It's you're the Lucy Pet formula is designed
for all,
where the ratio is the same no matter what stage of life they're in.
Right. I mean, I've raised millions of dogs on all life stages of it for 30 years in the business, and they've done fine. Everything's been great. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to raise millions of dogs.
And, yeah, yeah.
So, but pet food is all marketing. Marketing, the more SKUs you have, the more shelf space you have, the better off you are.
Organic versus just regular food. What is the benefits of eating organic food? Because a lot of food, you see a lot of foods in the market, they market as organic.
Yeah, it's very hard to get a full organic food. First of all, a full organic food, you couldn't afford it.
Okay.
If every ingredient was organic.
Well, that was my next question. Does that mean, when they say organic, does that mean every ingredient was organic, or that just means typically one ingredient is organic, like the protein?
Yeah, a lot of times like the chicken will be organic.
And everything else is pesticide ridden.
Is not organic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, are all organic for every ingredient would be cost prohibitive, kind of like a lot of these, the new thing with the fresh foods and everything, that is, everybody's thinking fresh is so good. It's so expensive. I actually looked into one of the brands just to see it was going to cost me $800 a month to feed my dog. I have a Great Pyrenees. It was going to be $800 a month to feed him this. And what's really kind of interesting is you haven't gone to the next step, and you see these little carrots in there, right? Oh, they're raw carrots, right? Okay. Let's just think scientifically a minute. Carrots are what, 90% water? Okay. Do you know how many pounds of carrots your dog's going to have to eat to get nutrient value when 90% of it is water? You know, it's kind of like canned dog food. I mean, I've always made canned, in the industry, we've always referred canned dog food as the art of making water stand still because it's, 82% moisture.
Is that true for humans too, though? So if I have a little handful of carrots, does that mean I'm really not getting many?
You're eating nutrients? Raw carrots. If you're eating raw carrots, it's got a lot of water in it. So yeah, same thing. If you actually did the analysis as to how much nutritional value you're getting, whereas if you dry,
so you're saying I should be eating a lot more carrots because I'm not getting. So technically, let's say if I have a small handful of carrots on my plate and they're raw. If I eat those, whatever, those 15 carrots, just for argument's sake, if I eat those 15 carrots, are you saying I'm not getting a whole lot of nutrients from those carrots because most of it's water?
Because it's 90% water. So there's the ratio. I mean, when you have all that water, that's why kibble, good kibble, is made with, fresh meat and fresh carrots, but then it all gets dry because you can't have that much water. So you use, the carrots are dried. So a scoop of dried carrots could equal, actually, I was going to do this and I haven't done it. A scoop of dried carrot could be like 10 pounds of carrots nutritionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because it's the water's taken out.
Yeah.
So you got to do the math.
Now, really quick, as far as allergies, a lot of people think that certain just dog foods cause allergies, but it's more the ingredients in the dog food, correct?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of dogs have, that's why grain-free started, because dogs were having allergic to wheat. I mean, wheat used to be the, 20 years ago, the big no-no, because all the dogs were allergic to wheat, and corn. That was why other alternative things started, and then grain-free started. And some dogs do have allergies to those. And, I get calls with people who are on our products. They were calling, like I said earlier, about because of DCM stuff, and they didn't want to go back to with grain because their dog was doing so well on grain-free. And I said, no, stay on the grain-free. I mean, our food's loaded with taurine, but most important, it's been done by Dr. Fahey, who's the guru, and Dr. Thompson, and those are the people that really know what's happening. Like, if I was just starting a pet food company today and nobody knew me, I would never get Dr. Fahey or Dr. Thompson. They wouldn't touch me.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
That's not the case. I've been in the industry for so long and I have a good reputation. So they were, happy to work with me.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jerry, what's the difference between these expensive foods and just the regular cheapos? Is there a big difference in ingredients? What make the expensive foods expensive, or is it all just marketing BS?
It should be the higher the price, the better the ingredient. And some companies, that is true. Other companies, that's not true. Some companies want to make a much bigger profit margin. Well, this is kind of interesting because there was a particular company that came out, and a friend of mine's got a pet store. And so he was buying this product for like $53. And so he was selling it for $65. So he was making $13 at his pet store because, he moves a lot of volume. And so the company that he was buying, their product, comes in and says, hey, you can't sell that for $65. You have to sell it for $82. And he said, I don't want to do $82. I don't want to make that kind of margin. That's ripping my customers off. I want to sell it for what I'm selling it for. And they said to him, you either sell it for what we want you to sell it for, or we're going to take it out of your store. And you know what? He kicked them out of the store. So, and why were they doing that? Because they wanted a perception that if you're paying $82, $83 for this bag, it must be really good. When in essence, it wasn't really good. So what's really sad is the consumer thinking you just want to do the right thing for your dogs. I mean, the dogs are, they depend on us.
Yeah.
And you want to do what's best. And, you buy an expensive bag of dog food and you think you're doing the best, and you find out that the company really is not what you think it is.
Profit. Yeah.
So, but, not everybody's, but you got to do the research and find out about the company and do all your research you can, because it's your dog's health depends on it.
Okay. What about canned food? Is the canned food technically the same nutritional benefits as the kibble? What differentiates canned food from kibble besides the obvious?
Well, you try to match your canned food to your bag as much as you can. The reason for canned food is because you have so many people that, oh, little Fluffy's got to have some canned food on top.
Yeah, you know? It makes it more like a chili, yeah. You know? Yep.
And so they use it. Whereas if you could just have your dog eat the dry, you'd be better off. But that's just not how everything works today. So,
yeah.
So you make a canned food. Well, like I said earlier, canned food is the art of making water stand still because it's, you know, 78% to 82% moisture.
Yeah.
So you have to eat a lot of canned food to get all the nutrient value. And if you eat as much canned food as you need to get the nutrients, your dog will be squirting out the back like crazy. So
Yeah.
I mean, most people use canned food as a mixer or some kind of topper. That's kind of why toppers are coming bigger today. You know, a lot of companies make a topper to put on dry.
What about salt in dog food? I know it's a big question people ask all the time. They say kibble has a very high sodium content.
No, kibble has the amount of sodium and salt that is needed for the health of the animal.
So it's not too much. No. It's okay. Because a lot of people, they use that as a talking point, as a debate, to never feed your dog kibble. They say it's too high in sodium. It's not natural. So you're saying the amount of sodium in dog food, obviously your brand, but you're not gonna vouch for every brand. But the amount of sodium you put in your dog food is, that's adequate what the dog needs?
It's if you're on all life stages, you're running your salt levels where you're supposed to be. AFCO does have rules about, you know, the formulations of where salt and all the things are supposed to be.
Yeah.
So no good nutritionist would run high salt.
Is there a website, a reputable one, that reviews dog foods and rates them on their quality?
Yeah.
Or is there nothing you'd really trust?
Well, I got to tell you, they're out there and they have all these reviews, and I'm reading reviews on certain sites who remain nameless, and I'm going, oh my God, if you only knew the truth. They don't know the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's nothing you'd really trust out there?
Nothing that I know of.
Right? Do you think a lot of it's just kind of bureaucratic and like kind of paid off? And
some yes, and other ones no. And I think other people are trying to do the right thing. And, you know, they don't know this particular food actually has all these other things in it because it's fraudulent. Because you wouldn't expect that to happen. So I think they're trying to do the right thing. They don't know. They haven't been in the industry like I have and seen the behind the scenes. And so they're writing these reviews and they don't really know what's going on.
So where can people learn more information about Lucy Pet Formulas for Life?
Oh, just go to Lucy Pet, lucypetfood.com or Lucy Pet, you know, lucypet.com. And there's all kinds of information. There's videos with Dr. Fahey talking about high protein causes cancer and all kinds of interesting things.
Yeah.
But no matter what company, just do the research on the company.
Yeah.
And go online and take going online with a grain of salt, but see what kind of reviews there are online from people who have having problems. There's a big brand that growing a lot, but it has so much mold problems. So if you go online and type in this brand's name and mold, it's all kinds of mold problems.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why I never liked raw. There's a raw company actually petitioning the FDA right now because he's saying it's not fair to the raw pet food industry to have zero tolerance for salmonella. You don't have zero tolerance for people food. That's raw. Like if you go to Ralph's grocery store and you buy chicken, well, what's the percentage? 15% to 18% is going to have salmonella. But at the grocery store, they tell you, wash your hands, wash your cutting board, wash your utensils, you know, clean up your bowls right away. And then we cook the hell out of chicken, right?
Yeah.
It's cooked. Well, this raw guy is saying that's, you know, it's not fair to have zero tolerance for raw dog food, but you're not going to cook the raw dog food. So you want your dog to eat salmonella. Now it's in his mouth. He goes licks somebody. He licks a kid. He licks an older person. Goes to the bathroom. There's salmonella in the yard.
Yeah.
Right? Another dog comes up and sniffs it. Now he's got salmonella.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are just facts. And a lot of people don't want to hear facts.
No, I know.
Yeah.
So where can people learn more about your foundation?
Go to lucypetfoundation.org, and it's terrific.
Yeah, we just pretty much talked about every single thing dog food related in the industry. I learned a lot, you know, in this talk right here. There's a lot I didn't know, and I mean, who'd have thought? I've been you know, working with dogs for over 20 years professionally, and a lot that I just did not know until this conversation. So, Joey, thanks for coming on, brother.
Oh no, thank you. Enjoyed it.
Okay, that does it for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe, share, rate, or review if you like this episode. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram at AnimalBrandon, Facebook at AnimalBrandon, and Twitter at Brandon McMillan. We are out of here. I will see you soon, folks. Till then, be good.